were to press with them.
Okay. So the reason the video camera is on, I see myself there. So it's to get raw material to work on the project myself. It's not clear if this will ever make it to the web, but at least I'll have an hour long tape video file to work with. So that's one reason. And the other reason, and it's probably also a good reason, is that I have to get used to having a video camera pointing at me. And it's a non-trivial thing to get used to, because I do tend to look at it. I should sort of learn to ignore it. Okay? I don't know if this is actually, you know, that much. So maybe it is a bad idea, at least for a small meeting like this. So maybe this will not go on. I don't know. Maybe it will go or maybe not. But say it.
No, small, big, it doesn't matter. It's the math. It depends on if you would like to, but I mean,
let me tell you, I wanted to say, I wish Jana was here because I wanted to ask her a question. Mm-hmm. But now it's on record that I wish Jana was here. Okay? Which is, So it's not just my privacy that's compromised, it's also yours to some extent.
You could edit out all the names.
Right, but part of the point is that I have to figure out a way to make it extremely easy. Otherwise I will not do it. If I have to spend an hour, 2 hours editing each video after spending 1 hour creating it, it's not going to happen. So, anyway, we'll see. So, I wanted to... So, by the way, am I talking today? I don't know, unless somebody else... Okay. So, I made a handout. But there is more stuff on it already coming. So, I don't know how much I'm... So I want to tell you about it and see. See where it goes. So, well, let me tell you what the main questions will be before telling you the content. Okay, so first. The sketch, you really do have to get used to having an eye on you all the time. It's not the same. It's like I'm not only speaking to you, I'm also kind of thinking about, oh my God, this is going to be fire. I really have to get used to it. And I'm sure it's possible, but it's a matter of it happening. So this is from a paper by me and Stavros Garofalidis. We found a curious formula for the weight system of the Conway polynomial. And I have a bit of renewed interest in this formula for several reasons. But let me start with the reasons that are on the handout, so on the back side, and then tell you a few other reasons as well. So, first of all, you know, there are the usual questions. Okay, whenever I have something to do with not theory, my current thing is I try to ask myself, oh, can you generalize it for W knots? So that's the first question. Does this all make sense for W knots? Then the second question, And the second, so this question I couldn't have asked back 12 years ago or whatever when we wrote this. But the second question I could have asked 12 years ago, and I don't know why I didn't. So it's a certain formula for the weight system, which happens at the weight system level. And then the question is there a similar formula at global level? So is there a similar formula for the Alexander polynomial itself? Okay? And the third question is, well, why should we care? So, you know, usually when I tell you something, often when I tell you something, I have some reason. Okay, so I don't know, last time I told you about the infinitesimal Alexander modules, and I got nowhere with it, by the way. Yet. Okay, it's only been a week. It's fair that it will take a bit longer. But I had a goal. I had a purpose. I sort of had a dream where that might lead us. Here, to some extent, it's just a curious formula. And these are natural questions, whether it generalizes to W naught and whether it globalizes. But if it does, I have no idea why bother. But on the other hand, so this is my sort of general religious statement that sort of, you know, things, fun things are not there by chance. If it's there, it's there so that we can play with it. I don't know. But this is sort of a general answer. I wish I had a specific answer as well. But actually, since writing this, I realized that it may be that this actually really is the best way of computing the, or it, I don't know if the best, but at least a viable way of computing the W formula for the Alexander polynomial. So this $10 question that I asked you, that I asked about a few times ago. Okay? Anyway, so...
that's the global level, right? That formula is at the global level that you get.
Yes. But I think it is actually... At least a part of the story is relevant. But maybe we should start going through the story and then seeing which parts are relevant. Okay, so maybe I'll start with the curious formula for the weight system. Okay, so first of all, a definition. So, given a core diagram, and let's assume that it's linear. Okay, so it's along a line, not on a circle. And it's a core diagram, not an arrow diagram. So here is an example. Here's a core diagram. Okay, let's call it, I don't know what. D. Let's define two quantities. So first of all, there is something that I will call the labeled intersection graph of D. Okay? So first of all, number the chords going from left to right. And it's actually important that you go from left to right. Well, maybe right to left, okay? But you don't random them. You don't number them in a random order. But you number them according to the left ends of, by the way, their left ends are ordered. So 1, 2, 3, 4. And the labeled intersection graph is a graph that has four vertices, 1, 2, 3, 4. And in general, vertices in bijection with the chords, and an edge, if two chords intersect. So one intersects two, so we have an edge from 1 to 2. One intersects 3, so we have an edge from 1 to 3. Two intersects 4, so we have an edge here, and 3 intersects 4, so we have an edge here. And these are all the intersections, so that's the labeled intersection graph. Okay, and I don't have much to say about it. It will play a small role later on, maybe. Anyway, more interesting is the intersection matrix. So the intersection matrix of D is it's a 4x4 matrix, which has zeros on the diagonal, and it has one whenever two chords intersect, and zero, or rather, let's say it differently. It has zero if two chords do not intersect. If they intersect, it has either one or minus one. One's below the diagonal, minus one above the diagonal. Okay? So in our case, we have, let's see, this is 1, 2, 3, 4. So one intersects with two. So we have a one here and a minus one here. Two intersects with four. So we have 2 with 4. So we have 1 here and negative 1 here. 1 intersects with 3. So we have negative 1 here and 1 here. 3 with 4. So 1 minus 1. And the rest are zeros. I think this is it. Okay? And then, theorem, this is the semi-curious theorem. It becomes more curious later on. So the theorem is that the determinant of the intersection matrix of D, so this is a linear function, so this, the map, D goes to the determinant, is a weight system. And in fact, it's the weight system of the Conway polynomial. So this is equal to the weight system of the Conway polynomial, or the Alexander polynomial of D. Okay? And maybe I'll just state the more curious fact. This is the fact that I can generalize for W naughts and globalize for W naughts. Okay? But then the more curious fact, this is a fact that requires a proof, requires a generalization, requires work. But the more curious fact is the fact that I really don't understand why is it there. So let me just tell you what the more curious fact is before going into the proof of this. So in fact, you've probably never heard of immanence. I don't remember how I first learned about immanence, but they're not everyday objects. Okay, but basically it goes as follows. So okay, first of all, there is the permanent of a matrix. So if the determinant of a matrix M is equal to sum over all permutations in the permutation group of the product of M I sigma I multiplied by a sign minus 1 to the I, the permanent of a matrix M is exactly the same except without the sign. So it's the sum over all permutation of the product of M I sigma I. Okay? Without signs. Generally speaking, the permanent is like 5 orders of magnitude less interesting than the determinant. Okay? There's hardly ever a place where the permanent is used. It's also much, much, much harder to compute. So in principle, the determinant takes n factorial time, or factorial time to compute. But actually, the determinant can be simplified and be computed in polynomial time. You do row reduction and nonsense, okay? The permanent, there is no such simplification. If you want to compute the permanent of a matrix, it's exponential time, it's factorial time. Okay, so it's, so that's another way in which it is sort of less magical than the determinant. The one place where I remember seeing a permanent is there is some conjecture about permanence that was open for many years, and then I think got solved, I don't remember how. Even this conjecture is unmotivated. I sort of, it's just a conjecture. Somebody asked it, and it was open for many years, and therefore it became famous, and therefore it became important, like Fermat's last theorem. Okay, but it's not like you have anything to do with that conjecture. Supposing it became true, maybe I'll state the conjecture just for fun. Okay, so conjecture. Or, I don't know, maybe I should call it conjecture theorem, because it became a theorem. It was a conjecture for many years, but now it's a theorem, and I don't remember who proved it. So, first of all, a matrix is called doubly stochastic. So, M is doubly stochastic. These are actually useful in various places. If it's like a... If it's like what do you call it, a magic square? So if the rows and the columns add up to one. Sudoku. No, it's not quite Sudoku. Sudoku, you have a permutation in every row and every column, right? But this is more like a
magic square.
Okay? So if for every I, sum over j, sorry, not zero exists, but for every I, sum over j of mij is equal to sum over j of mji is equal to 1. Okay? And the conjecture is that this implies that the permanent of m is greater than or equal to, okay, so let's see. Jana, should I quickly tell you what we've done?
Yeah, I can try and figure it out.
But do you want to try to figure it out? Let's just quickly go. You know what, let's start from the end. So I defined a funny object called the permanent of a matrix M. And it's exactly like the determinant except without the signs. And now I'm stating the only fact I know about permanence. And more or less this is to tell you that permanence... So I'm sure there is more about permanence, by the way. It's only that I'm retarded, okay? But, you know, I can probably give you, you know, many hours of lecture about determinants, but very little about permanence. And probably if you look at the sum total of all math books, you could probably do several years of conversation about determinants and a week of conversation about permanence. Okay, so I mean, my sort of knowledge factor is probably correct, okay, somehow. So I'm basically just telling you that it's a remote object. Anyway, the conjecture is that if you have the only fact that I know, so the conjecture, which is now a theorem, if a matrix is doubly stochastic if the sums of the rows and the sums of the columns are 1, and then the conjecture for many years was that in that case, the permanent is greater than something. So let me tell you what that something is. So first of all, you can get the permanent to be pretty big by looking at the permutation matrix, right? If you have a permutation matrix, then the permanent is, well, then there is only one contribution, and the contribution comes from that permutation, and then the product of the entries is a product of ones, so the permanent is 1, okay? So you can get the permanent to be 1. Okay, but the question is, how low can you go? And the conjecture was that the lowest was if M is the matrix that has 1 over n everywhere. So 1 over n in all n squared entries, right? In this case, the permanent would be, so there are all permutations would be the same. Each permutation contributes 1 over n to the power n. So each permutation contributes n 1 over n to the n. And you have n factorial permutations, so that's the permanent. So that's the conjecture. And in fact, sorry, I think the conjecture also said with equality if and only if the matrix is this matrix. And again, it was open for many years, eventually got solved, and God knows what it is good for. Okay? Anyway, if permanents are bizarre objects, immanents are even worse. So, the idea with an immanent is when you say, well, this comes from the alternating representation of the permutation group. This comes from the trivial representation of the permutation group. Let's put an arbitrary representation. Meaning, let's take, so the immanent of a matrix M relative to a representation R, so R is a representation of SN, is defined to be sum over all permutations of the trace in that representation. So if you take the representation applied to sigma, to a permutation, you get a matrix. That matrix has nothing to do with M, right? It would be of a completely different size, okay? But I want something numerical out of this matrix. So I take the trace in that representation of sigma, okay? And then I multiply it by the same product of mi sigma I, okay? So that's the immanent in representation R. And again, I've seen a few papers about immanents because I was looking it up. I'm sure that if we Google immanent, we'll find, and an immanent is spelled in a funny way. But I'm sure that we will find some stuff about it. I think you get various inequalities, like the immanent in one representation is bigger or smaller than the immanent in another, or things like that. Okay, but what it is good for, I have no idea. Okay. But anyway, the next thing that's natural to do is to replace the representation or the trace in the representation by the universal trace. Okay? Meaning by just the conjugacy class of sigma. So trace is invariant under changing conjugacy, under changing an element within its conjugacy class. So just make it a formal sum in the conjugacy class. So then define the universal immanent of a matrix M to be sum over all permutations. For each permutation, take its conjugacy class, multiply it by the usual thing. This is now an element of, well, it's a linear combination of conjugacy classes. Conjugacy classes are the center of the group ring, well, of any group. Okay, so let's just call it the ZSN. Okay. But again, you know, if you know that this is the center of the group ring of SN, then the name makes sense. But if not, then just it's the set of all formal linear combinations of conjugacy classes. Okay? Again, for all I know, it's a completely useless object. But now we have a further theorem. Okay, so the further theorem is that the universal immanent of the intersection matrix of a core diagram D is a weighted system, so satisfies 4T. But in fact, as a weight system, it's not a terribly interesting one. So the more main interest came from the determinant. So in fact, it's the it's always in the span of the Conway polynomial. So if you look at the coefficients of the Conway polynomial and multiply them with each other, so if you write every coefficient of the Conway polynomial is a finite type invariant. If you take different coefficients, like the fifth coefficient and the seventh coefficient, and multiply them, you'll get something which is not a coefficient of the Conway polynomial, but is less powerful. Okay? But the claim is that you always get the weight systems of products of coefficients of the Conway polynomial. Okay? So satisfies 4T and is in, I don't know, let's call it the span of the Conway polynomial. Okay? So just to, Jana, just to, since you were out, so the intersection matrix of a diagram D is you make a matrix with one row for each chord and one column for each chord, and then you put ones where chords intersect and zeros otherwise, except if you're above the diagonal, you put minus ones. So this is the intersection matrix of this chord diagram, and then the claim was that the determinant of the intersection matrix is the weight system of the Conway polynomial. Okay? So Jana, okay, before going on, I think I want to ask you another question, okay? So remember my $10 question from a few weeks ago, okay? So which said that the Conway polynomial, or rather the Alexander polynomial itself, at some variable x, is equal to, what was it, the determinant of the identity minus a certain matrix, which I called the trapping matrix, okay, which had to do with whether one chord ends inside the span of another chord, multiplied by something like x to the s minus 1, where s was a diagonal matrix with only signs on the diagonal having to do with the directions of the chords. Okay? So one comment and then a question. So comment, in some sense this is more natural than the other determinants. By the way, is this right? I have a feeling I'm missing a term or something. But anyway, whatever we did a few weeks ago was right, okay? But in some sense this is more natural than the usual formulas for the Alexander polynomial, the usual determinant formulas for the Alexander polynomial, because these formulas, okay, intrinsically the determinant, or a determinant is something which is associated with a linear transformation going from a vector space to itself. It has to be to itself. There is no such thing, the determinant of a matrix going from V to W, only from V to V. Okay, if you identify V with Rn and W with Rn, then, and both are of the same dimension, then you can make a determinant, but it will be dependent on the identification. But if you have a matrix, if you have a linear transformation going from a vector space to itself, you always have a determinant. It makes sense. It's independent of how you identify it with Rn. Okay? So, for matrices that are defined combinatorially, it somehow makes sense to consider the determinant if the thing that enumerates the rows is the same thing that enumerates the columns. Okay, only then you have an unambiguous determinant. Or only then the determinant is natural. And again, this is partially a religious statement, okay? So I mean, this is my sort of, things have to be of a certain way, of a certain form, okay? Now the usual formulas for the Alexander polynomial, I don't know if the usual, but some formulas for the Alexander polynomial, like the one coming from the Fock derivatives, are not like that. So you get a row for each arc and a column for each relation, so for each crossing, or something like that. And then you identify the arcs with the crossings by saying every arc ends in a crossing. So let's use this to establish a bijection between the crossings and the arcs, or something like that, okay? But that's still artificial. It's an artificial identification, and in fact the way Jana sees it is that's what's responsible for the fact that in your invariant you don't just get half densities, but half densities tensored with an ordering of the outgoing strands, because somehow this identification fails on the outgoing strands. They're not paired with anything. So you have to artificially order them, okay? So so the comment is that this is more natural, okay? Because this is intrinsically a matrix whose rows and columns are parameterized by the same thing, okay? And then the question I have to ask is, can you do the Jana thing to this? So, question, generalize to tangles so that there will be a reasonable composition formula. And in fact, it's probably not tangles that we care about, but W tangles. And we don't care about planar algebra, but about circuit algebra and the usual things, okay? But can you do this for tangles somehow? Okay? So that's the question I was meaning to ask you around lunchtime. Anyway, so back to our subject. Okay. So, I think I want to start with proving the determinant fact, and then show you how it implies the immanent fact. Okay? And again, my real question at the end is, so what? Okay? So why is the determinant fact true? So first of all, notice that how is WC computed? So let me remind you. So the Conway polynomial satisfies that over minus, should I remind you, or is it stuff that you Okay, so the Conway polynomial is defined by over minus under is equal to z times a smoothing, and the Conway polynomial of k independent circles is equal to delta 1 and k. So if k is equal to 1, it's 1, and otherwise it's 0. Okay? So on the level of weight systems, so this is just the double point. So the double point is proportional to z. So every specific coefficient of the Conway polynomial will be of finite type, because if you have too many double points, you'll have too many z's in front. So and also that tells you how to compute the weight system. So you compute the weight system, so here is how WC works. Well, if you want to compute the weight system of the Conway polynomial on, I suppose this is a bad example because it comes out a zero, okay? So let's compute it on, let's just compute it on this. Then what you do is, first of all, this is what becomes a chord, and it gets replaced by a smoothing. The smoothing becomes a bridge. So the smoothing means that you connect, if you enter a double point, you exit on the other side. So this becomes, you exit on the other side, and if you enter the double, point from the other side, you again exit from its other side. So every chord becomes a bridge. And then, so if you have two chords, you'll get two bridges. Okay? And then if you get a single connected component, it means that you got a single circle, so you get one, and if you get more than a single connected component, you get zero. So then this goes to one or zero. In our case, it's a one. Okay, because there is a single connected component here. The thing about the Conway weight system is that it satisfies... Okay, so the Conway weight system actually satisfies a stronger relation than 4T. Because, let's do it differently. Why does Conway satisfy 4T? Well, it actually satisfies something stronger. So, WC satisfies the 2T relation, which says that if you have a chord and some other chords ends near it, then you can slide the end of the other chord to here, to the other side. So the 4T relation will say that this minus that plus this minus that is equal to zero. The 2T relation will say that two of the terms cancel separately and the other two cancel separately. So this is equal to that, and also this is equal to that. Okay? And the reason it is true is that once a chord has been turned into a bridge, you can walk on the, the sidewalk, on either side of the bridge. Okay, so if there is another chord ending here, which it also becomes a bridge, but who cares? I mean, you can still slide it to the other side, and that will not change the number of connected components. Okay? So, WC satisfies 2T.
So this is true even if other chords come in and then...
Yeah, I don't care what come. So I think that the convention is sort of, if things are near, it means nothing comes in between. But if things are big, I'm allowing more stuff to come in. So, you know, there could be more stuff here, provided it's the same in all, well, in these two pictures. In these two pictures, it could be a different same. Okay? So let's take a picture and start with another blackboard. So what do we call it? Immanence. No, this is not spelled right. Immanence. No, immanence. Okay. Jana, did you take from the camera? Okay, so, ouch. I guess let's erase everything except 2T. Okay, so what are chord diagrams modulo 4T? Sorry, 2T. So what is D mod 2T? Okay, what is the space of all chord diagrams modulo the 2T relation? Okay, so the key point is that if you have a two-hump camel, well, if you have two intersecting chords anywhere, doesn't matter which, just if you have two intersecting chords in your diagram, you can clear all the space inside them. You can clean the inside. So, in other words, if you have now more chords ending here, maybe even starting here, you can slide them out. Okay? And the reason is that, let's draw it with bridges. So, that's actually perhaps the best way to visualize the 2T relation. It just means that you can walk on the two sides of the bridge. So if you have anything ending here, you can slide its end to the outside by going this way. Okay? So in other words, you apply 2T one time. Sorry. No. This is even easier. You can just slide it out from to this direction. But you could also slide it to the furthermore, you can slide everything out to the right. Okay? Because, say you want to slide this out, first of all you use 2T to bring it to here, then you use another, then you slide it to here, then you use another 2T to bring it to here, and you slide it to here, then you use another 2T to slide it out. So strictly speaking, everything had to be clear along the way so that we could slide it. So if it isn't, if not everything is clear, slide the other stuff first. Okay? In other words, if I want to clean this, then I approach it from this direction. So far I'm outside, so I don't care if I see dirt here. But then I go here, if I see dirt here, the first piece of dirt that I see, so the first chord that ends here, I slide it out. Now I have less dirt. And then I continue moving, and if I see more dirt, I slide it out. If not, then this area is wiped clean, and then I continue and wipe clean this area by sliding stuff all the way out. Okay? So the moral is that once you have a single crossing, you can bring it to be isolated. You can bring it to be a two-hump camel. Okay? So your original diagram, if it had a crossing, I can convert it to a diagram that starts like this. And now here I could have more mess, because I slide everything to the right, and here I could have the mess that remained. Okay? But that mess that remained might have another crossing. If it has another crossing, I slide everything else further to the right, and I just have this other crossing next to this one, and more mess here. But I have finitely many chords, and I never increase the number of chords. So eventually I will have no further crossings. So I'll get a number of these, some number, N2. And then what remains is a chord diagram with no crossings.
What do you mean crossings?
It's no intersections. Sorry, no chord intersections. Intersections. No intersections. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, a chord diagram that has no intersections has a general form like this. Okay? But now I do exactly the same thing, but to Z's. So I take an innermost thing, an innermost bubble, and everything can slide on top of it. So I can slide this to here. Okay? And then I have a chord here. So basically what I'm saying is that, well, if you have a chord diagram with no, well, just like if I had a chord diagram that did have intersections, I could slide an intersection out. If I have an isolated chord, I can slide it out. If I have a single, the minimal isolated chord, I can slide everything on top of it to the right. So it is left on the left. So then I do this repeatedly, and I get a number of these, some number N1. And after that, there is nothing further that I can do. Well, in principle, I have to prove. Well, I don't know if I have to prove, but I mean, you have to show that there is nothing further that you can do. It's not terribly hard, and it's not right now the point. Okay? Now, what is the... Conway, what does the Conway weight system do to a thing like that? Well, WC will map this to either 0 or 1. The Conway weight system is always 0 or 1 valued. And it will map it to, depending on whether when you replace every chord by a bridge, whether you get a single connected component or not. Well, if you do a double hump, if you replace a double hump camel, also I should say that these are called caravans, because it's a chain of camels. Okay, it's double hump ones and then single hump ones. So, if you find a, so all the double hump camels, when you bridge them, when you thicken them, become single connected components. Because right, this is a single component. You go along and you find that you just come out on the other side having visited everywhere. So these just become single connected components. And then the moment you have a single hump camel, well, a single hump camel becomes two connected components. So the moment you have a single hump camel, it's no longer a single connected component. So this is one if n1 is equal to 0, and 0 if n1 is greater than 0. Okay? And by the way, aside, I don't know if you remember the GLN weight system. At some point we evaluated the GLN weight system in class, okay? So how did the GLN weight system evaluate? Well, it was the exact same thing. So if you have a diagram, you first thicken it or bridge it, and then you count the number of connected components, and WGLN of a diagram D is n to the power of the number of connected components. Okay? So, two things. First of all, it satisfies 2t, because the first step of the, because 2t only depended on the fact that we thicken. Okay, so it satisfies 2t for the exact same reason. But it satisfies a different initial condition. So WGLN on the caravan with N1 and N, so with N1 single hump and N2 double hump camels is different. Okay, it's not this 0-1 thing, but instead, well, all the N2s don't count, they become a single component. Each N1 adds one to the number of connected components, so this is N to the power N1, or maybe N1 plus 1. Okay? That's just also a way of seeing that there is a relationship between GLN and Conway. So specifically, the relationship is that WC is equal to, well, I want I want to only see the places where N1 is equal to 0. Sorry, to 0, yes. So then, in other words, I want to only see the places, only the coefficient of N in GLN. Okay? So this will be the derivative with respect to N of WGLN. So WGLN will give you a polynomial in N. Differentiate it, and the n factor becomes the constant term, and then evaluate it at n equals to 0. So the Conway polynomial is somehow the derivative of GLN at n equals 0. And that actually generalizes. So, this actually globalizes. So the invariant corresponding to GLN is Homfli. And if you appropriately parameterize Homfli, then the derivative of Homfli at n equals 0, with respect to n at n equals 0, is Conway. And in general, this is sort of another way of seeing the fact that Conway is related to Homfli, or that Conway is a subset of Homfli, or can be computed from Homfli. Okay. All of this, having said all of this, now if I want to prove a theorem about WC, it's enough to show that it satisfies 2t and the initial condition.
Does the Homfli has anything to do with the two-term relation? I mean, top, like, so the GLNY system satisfies the 2T?
Yeah.
When you globalize, do you see that at all?
I never thought about it. I don't know what the 2T relation is in global terms. And you could ask the same about the Conway, right? What does the 2T relation become? I don't know. So anyway, it is enough to show, so right, I want to show that the determinant of the intersection matrix is WC. It's enough to show that that intersection matrix satisfies 2T and I don't know, let's call this star. So the value of on caravans is the correct value. And that the value on caravans is the correct value. Okay? So let's do that. Okay. I guess, first of all, what's the intersection matrix of a caravan? Well, it has N2 blocks, which are 2 by 2, and then N1 blocks, which are 1 by 1. So N2 of Z's and N1 of Z's. Right? Because there are clearly no intersections between separate camels. Now, for the 2 by 2 blocks, well, it's 0, 0, and 1 minus 1. Because the two chords intersect, okay? So it's 0, 0, and 1 minus 1. And the 1 by 1 blocks, well, there are no intersections, so they're just 0. Okay? And the determinant of this is just the determinant of a block diagonal matrix. This is 1, 1, and then if there are any of those, it's 0. So it's delta N1, 1, which is what you wanted. Okay? Now we have to check the 2T relation. And I don't think I want to do it in detail because, well, it's not.
So
no
you
fun.
Do mean N10, right? You want N1 to be 0.
I do mean N10.
Okay.
Yes.
So
I suppose the point is, I want to compare this with that. Okay? Now, okay, consider this chord ends somewhere. So let's say it ends here. So I have the cord I slide on and the cord that I slide, and I slide it from here to here. Consider this triangle. It's actually kind of like a hyperbolic triangle in a hyperbolic plane, right? And it's a kind of minute, almost minute, because, well, these are really near. There's nothing else that comes in, okay? So any other chord will intersect this triangle either zero times or twice. So any other chord in the diagram either intersect this triangle twice or zero times. Well, here is a zero times chord. And in fact, if it intersects it twice, it can be in either of three ways. Either the way I wrote it, so kind of around, well, it intersects these two edges, or this way, or that way. Now, what does it mean about the intersection matrix? So we actually have two intersection matrices, right? We have the intersection matrix before the move and after the move, and we want to compare them. So in this intersection matrix, there will be, so let's give the chords a name. So this is the, so the purple ones are the one we are the extra chords, okay? But the active ones are this one. We slide A, B over A. Okay? So there will be a row for A, and it will be in the same place as here. And in fact, the two rows are the same, because A never moved. Okay? But there is also a row for B, and also a similar row for B here, and let's compare the and these rows change. So let's figure out how they change. So, well, for this type of chords, no change. For columns corresponding to this type of chords, no change. For columns corresponding to this type of chords, no change. Because, right, if this is, so maybe I should call this B1 and B2, then this is, say, B1, this is A, B1, B2. If something intersects B1, it also intersects B2. Okay? Now, for this type of chords, if it intersected B1 and it intersects A, then it will not intersect B2. And if it intersects B2 and intersects A, so basically whatever intersects A flips. Okay? So if we were more working over Z mod 2, it would just mean that B2, the row B2 is equal to the row B1 plus A. Okay? But that's a row operation, and determinants are invariant under row operations. Okay? So I suppose, and the rest is checking that the signs work out. The rest is to check that sort of the sign convention was such that what needs to be, well, that it works out. Okay? So, we're done. Okay. Now, let me take another picture and move on to immanence.
So the way you show the corresponding fact for immanence, so you know what, I'm not sure if this is the way. It's the way Stavros and I used 12 whatever years ago. I mean, there must be a better way. There could be a better way, but here's what we did. We prove actually something a bit stronger. Okay? So let me tell you what we prove. Are you okay? Is there? So first of all, let me remind you that D is a Hopf algebra, or more precisely a bialgebra. Right, because it has a multiplication, which is just juxtaposition. You can, whenever you have two diagrams, you can put them next to each other. And it has a co-multiplication, which is a sum over splittings. If you have a diagram, you can decide whether each chord goes to the left or to the right. Okay? Likewise, labeled intersection graphs. So you see, I defined a labeled intersection graph of a of a chord diagram to be a certain graph, but there is really a space of labeled intersection graphs, which are just graphs that are whose vertices are enumerated 1 to n. Mm-hmm. Okay, so leagues are also a bialgebra. Are likewise a bialgebra, and the way they are a bialgebra is by, okay, so the product will be, you put two labeled intersection graphs next to each other, really disjoint union, except you re-enumerate the vertices of the other one so that you'll get continuous numbering, okay? And the coproduct is you split all the vertices. So you know, you have a labeled intersection graph, it has vertices. You sum over all ways of splitting the vertices into two groups, taking one group to the left, one group to the right, and the and if an edge should go from left to right, you just erase it. So you take with you the edges to the left, and you take with you the edges to the right, but the edges that have to be stretched too much get torn.
Is the intersection matrix sort of invariant if you sort of label, if you cut your circle at different?
No.
Okay.
So everything is happening on long chord diagrams.
Okay.
And everything, you can show, most things, everything you can show descends, but, or most things you can show descend, but I'm just working with long okay? And clearly, the labeled intersection graph map, which goes from D into the set of labeled intersection graphs, is a bi-algebra morphism. Is a morphism. Okay? Because it's clear that I just did the same thing. So the determinant of the intersection matrix, or even the immanent of the intersection matrix, is a functional on labeled intersection graphs. So I want to show that it too is a bi-algebra morphism. Okay? And then the idea will be that that bi-algebra that we're talking about is generated by a single element, the weight system of the Conway polynomial, and therefore and since it satisfies 4t, all other immanents satisfy. Since the determinant satisfies 4t, all other immanents satisfy 4t just as well. So that's the sketch. But let's try to do it now. So first of all, I want to turn Zsn into a bi-algebra. Okay? So remember what Zs are. So Zs are conjugacy classes of, or linear combinations of conjugacy classes of permutations. So first of all, I want to allow all degrees rather than just degree n. So first of all, write Zs star, and this will be the direct sum over all n of all Zsn's. Okay? Now, if you have a permutation on n letters and another permutation on m letters, you can turn it into a permutation on n plus m letters, basically by permuting the first n independently of the last n. Okay? So you have a map from here to here, and this induces a map. So if you have a conjugacy class here and a conjugacy class here, you get a conjugacy class here. So that induces, so therefore Zs star is an algebra. Okay? And I also have to tell you what the co-algebra structure is. What is the co-algebra structure? So how do you say it in the... So I know how to say it. By the way, do you know what the conjugacy classes of Sn are? That's the, first thing too. So what is Zsn? Okay? So, you know what? That's an aside. Aside. Yeah. So two permutations are conjugate if and only if they have the same cycles. Okay, so here's a way of writing it. Okay, every sigma in Sn is conjugate to a
partition. So what's a partition? You write the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, up to n. Okay? And then you say, let's take the first four, let's partition it into subsets. So first four, and then the next three, and then maybe another three, so 8, 9, 10, and then maybe two more, and then maybe a few singletons as well. But the lengths should be decreasing, mono or non-increasing. So to a partition with non-increasing lengths. Okay? And you see, a partition like that is a permutation because, well, I wrote it as a cyclic permutation. So 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 3, and so on. Okay? So, you know what? And I should have added to a unique partition. Okay? Proof. First of all, proof sketch. Okay. So first of all, conjugating a permutation does not change the lengths of the cycles in it. So that's the uniqueness. And second, you want to show that it's conjugate to a to this. Well, the conjugating map will, okay, you take an element on the longest cycle and map it to 1. Then you, so you're given sigma, you find the longest cycle, and the longest cycle, well, it doesn't start anywhere because it's a cycle. But choose a starting point on the longest cycle, and call it, say it was I, and map it to 1. That's the, I'm describing the conjugating map. Then the thing which is next to I in sigma, so sigma of I, you map to 2. Sigma squared of I, you map to 3, and so on. And then in what remains, you choose basically you continue. I'm sure there are better ways of saying it, but okay. So the coproduct map will be split the cycles. Something tells me I'm doing something too complicated. Give me a second. What did we say a long time ago? We kind of left it as an exercise, essentially. So the coproduct will be so conjugacy classes are enumerated by partitions, and then the coproduct map will be to split the partition in all possible ways. So basically, some parts go to the left and some parts go to the right. So this is the coproduct. So, right, if you split a partition, if you take, you still get a partition, you still get a
a list of lengths. So, so in other words, well, I don't know. Okay, here is a different way of saying it. Zs star is isomorphic to the span of things that we will call, I don't know what, the conjugacy class of K1 up to KL, where K1 is greater than or equal to K2 is greater than or equal to so on up to KL. Okay? And then delta of C K1 up to KL will be the sum of all ways of splitting Z's. So things of the form C K1, K3, K4, tensor C K2, K5, and so on. Okay. So, claim, and I probably should stop here and then sort of summarize. Because if I'll try to prove this claim, well, we're running out of time. So claim, the universal immanent of the intersection matrix. So if you compose these two things, you get a map from D, from core diagrams, not mod 4T, to ZS star. And the claim is that this is a bi-algebra morphism. Okay? And the proof is, you basically trace the definition. I mean, the definitions. It's there is no. I'm not claiming anything deep. So that's the claim. And therefore. Therefore, what? Well, so this bi-algebra has one generator in each degree. The generator being the cycle of a given length. Okay, because right by the product is juxtaposition, so you can get partitions by multiplying cycles. So the generator of so this one is generated by a single generator. This one has a single generator in each degree. If I could tell you that the coefficient of this single generator satisfies 4T, then because of this compatibility, the coefficients of products of generators would satisfy 4T, and so the entire map would satisfy 4T, and so we've proven that you satisfy 4T. So it's enough to show that the single generators, the coefficients of single generators satisfy 4T, and without details, it follows from the fact that the Conway polynomial satisfies 4T. because the Conway polynomial is just a certain functional, it's just a certain specific immanent. But it's enough to have one, well, one in each degree, but we have, you know, we have one determinant in each dimension. So without details, it follows from Conway. So maybe I'll just enumerate, what time is it? 3:51. Maybe I'll just enumerate the questions. So, first of all, part of it definitely extends to W naughts. So, the thing that replaces the intersection matrix is this trapping matrix. So it's this matrix which, so if you have an arrow and the second arrow, it's one if the second arrow ends within the span of the first arrow, but it's plus or minus one if the second arrow ends within the span of the first arrow, but it's plus one if it comes from the left, and it's minus one if it comes from the right. And the direction of the first arrow does not matter. The determinant of this trapping matrix show directly that the determinant of this trapping matrix satisfies overcrossings commute. And, you know, I didn't check all the details, but sort of, it seems that it satisfies 4T as well, up to not checking the signs. Okay, so without checking signs, it seems that it satisfies 4T. But I actually also wrote a program to compute it, and it satisfies 4T up to degree 4. So it satisfies 4T. And basically, I have a sketch of a proof, and I have a verification. So it's true. It is the weight system of the $10 questions, the $10 question, which I don't know that, and I don't know that it's equal to the Conway polynomial, strictly speaking. But okay.
Is the trapping matrix the T in the $10 question?
It's the T along with signs. Right, in the T of the... of the $10 questions, there were no signs, but here I differentiate the signs. There is no relationship that I know with GLN, but there may be a relationship that I don't know. But that's exactly the question, okay? Or let's put it this way. I don't know the relationship with GLN. There is no 2T relation, and that's somehow the other question that I asked you a few days ago, of whether there is a Conway relation for W naughts. I don't know. I should say that if you look at the GLN weight system, and you, so it satisfies the 6T relation, and the 6 terms, I think, split to 3 and 3. So in fact, it satisfies a certain 3T relation. But 3T is not as good as 2T. 2T just means that you can get from one diagram to the next and simplify. If you have a three-term relation, it means that you get a branching tree if you try to simplify.
So it's much less useful. So given that the proof of this claim, well, the proof of this claim hardly used anything. So I think immanence still give you weight systems. I think it's, I don't know what to do with it. And I don't know if it globalizes. Okay, the difference between this and the Conway situation is that the intersection matrix formula was not obviously the localization, the infinitesimalization, the projectivization of any formula that I know for the global Conway polynomial. Okay?
But could you say that? Sorry.
Okay. This, the determinant of the trapping matrix is the straightforward projectivization of the $10 question. So you could ask yourself, if you replace immanence by determinants in the $10 question, do you get invariants? And I don't know, I have no opinion. I guess I must have a few other questions, but I don't remember what they are. I think the general question is always just to sort, put order into this. I don't know. I don't know, that's all I had. So, let's take a last picture.
What did you, sorry, the, I have no idea what you just, the trapping matrix was the...
So, if you look...
What?
If you look at the... at the $10 question,
mm-hmm.
and try to get the weight system out of it. So...
Is it?
So, you just...
Okay.
Just look at that formula and differentiate it 10 times. Differentiate in the not-theoretic sense, okay? You'll get... quite immediately this trapping matrix determinant. No, so my questions are still the questions that I put on the handout. So first of all, how much of it extends to W knots? So when I wrote it, I really didn't know. Now I know a little more, so I'm quite sure that this trapping matrix is the correct extension, and that the that the universal immanent is also a W weight system. And then, can you globalize this? And then, who cares? And I really don't know why I should care. I said that in the beginning. It's kind of a curious formula or a curious fact that you can replace determinant by permanent or immanent. And I really don't know why it should matter. Maybe it doesn't matter. But that would be against my religion. So I should warn Jana that everything was videotaped. I don't know if you noticed. What?
I didn't notice.
You did?
Didn't.
Did not. And that it's partially for experimental reasons, but it may or may not go online. And Your name was mentioned before you were here, so perhaps we should show you how. So let's turn it off now. Okay.